Hello, everybody. As usual, we have an interview today, and another special guest we have today. And before I get introducing Ian Altman, I would like to tell the story what happened. I made a little training with people about the sales and how we, sell the virtual CIO. And what happened is a guy came after me and he said, like, this is a book, same site selling. You have to read it. You know, if I can't imagine you cannot or you didn't read this book. And I said, like, okay, another book, you know, guy is coming with a book. And during the flight back, I checked the book, same size selling. And that was like two interesting people recommending the book, Seth Godin and Daniel Pink. And both of, I'm a big fan of those guys and I give it a chance. And you know what, that was the greatest book I ever read recently. So Ian Altman is the author of the book, and I'm really privileged to we can have Ian here with us, and that was a great book, and just I want to have like a on the fly interview with him about his thoughts, because it's 100% aligned what we try to do. So Ian, a couple of words about you and how you get the conclusion to write a book. So what was the motivation? So
well Dinesh, first, thanks for having me here. And those really flattering comments. I always say that my co-author Jack Quarles wrote all the good parts, and I wrote the rest.
Yeah.
So the interesting part is that my co-author Jack, he and I met through this kind of networking organization, and you would think, since Jack spent 20 years in the purchasing and procurement side of the world, that we wouldn't get along. And the reality is that we were teaching people very similar concepts, just from a different perspective. And we kind of put our heads together and said, I don't think there's been a book written that talks about the sales side from the buyer's perspective and how to get both sides on the same side. I mean, if you think about it, almost every book that's ever been written about sales or selling either uses a game metaphor where one side wins and the other side loses, or it uses a battle metaphor where one side wins and the other side dies. And then you wonder why there's an adversarial tension between buyers and sellers.
Yeah, so it's like when I was starting this whole thing, that was the first thing what I get, like this, you have this metaphor like the game and the puzzle. So the puzzle is the big picture which we and the client are get together, and this, if we are able, we win both. If we not, we are kind of not be able to do or get the goal or something like that. So how you get that, or what was behind? Because you know what I think is, like, you can write a book and you can master these type of skills, but I really like to see the underlying principles, like your way of thinking, because think you should not teach people sales tactics, closing tactics, or whatever. You have to,
exactly.
They have to somehow feel, and somehow I can't really put this together, but I feel the same, but I really wasn't able to put in really great stories and stuff like that. But how this, thinking is coming?
Well, so there's a lot of research that I've done. Now, in my background, I grew my first company. I started in 1993. We were one of the 50 fastest growing companies in the Washington, D.C. area by 1998. We then built a software company also and sold both companies in 2005. The acquiring company asked me to serve as managing director of the parent. We grew the company to a valuation in excess of $1 billion in a few years. So I spent a lot of time growing businesses. And I was a firm believer from day one that it's all about results, and everything's got to be integrity-based. You can't have an approach to selling that feels disingenuous or that's inauthentic, because then you're really lying, and you know you are. And there's a certain subset of people you can attract into that space, but not for long. I mean, no one wants to be that slimy salesperson. But people who do a great job in selling are actually helping their customers solve problems they can't solve for themselves. So I started doing some research when I started this company that said, okay, how do executives make decisions? What's the thought process they go through? And then we built and designed a sales methodology around the way customers make decisions.
It's kind of interesting thoughts what you, beside this, the idea. is that you what I like on this book is that it's not, it's really, I can't say it's not a sales book. It's way, the scope is bigger. It's lots of marketing there, lots of delivery. So it's like seeing this whole thing from a, you know, holistic perspective. So for example, chapter two, like this whole thing is all about you have to differentiate yourself. And yeah. For example, the IT companies are listening this podcast is they have the biggest issue that why I'm better than the competition next door, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that idea, but you know, can you just elaborate on that? It's like the, sure. On the differentiation.
Sure. So there's a few concepts. The first, the reason why it's called same side selling, but there's content in there about marketing, is because as consumers, how do we work? Well, we first have a little bit of interest, so maybe we contact the company, then we go to find information about them. We want unbiased information about them. So we go to their website, and guess what? We go to every other place on the internet we can find information about them. Well, so if you're not telling your story, someone else is, so you better be telling your story. When it comes to differentiation, I can't tell you how many technology companies say, oh, we're a full-service IT outsourcing company. Which is ridiculous to say, because it's not like the competition says, oh yeah, we're a partial service company.
Yeah. So we have shitty customer service.
We don't really care about our customers. I know the other people say they do, we don't. No one says that. So when you say, oh, we really value our customers, like what is the competition saying? That they don't? So it's not a good message. Instead, what you need to do is you need to think about, which clients do you serve better than anybody else? What circumstances are you better at serving than the competition is? Where's your niche, if you will, that you can really latch on to? Because once you find that niche or differentiation, you might be the best service provider in Winnipeg for professional services companies between 24 and 48 employees. And that's not a bad niche to be in. If you're the best in that space, then anyone who fits that profile says, wow, we're going to come to you. But that's not enough, because that's just demographics. Then you start saying, look, it's really the firms who feel that they're losing a lot of billable time because their systems are down. They waste a lot of time talking to and trying to figure out if their IT people internally really know what they're doing, because they're not IT people. They might be lawyers or accountants. They don't know if the IT person knows what they're doing. So they just wish they had a way to know whether or not the person knows what they're doing.
And that leads to the next question, which is like, your differentiation is basically finding, differentiating what you do, but differentiating who you do what you do. And that's basically the next kind of chapter, is when you're elaborating on this. Who is the customer you, it's really interesting, it's not your target customer, who is the customer can benefit from your services is best. And that was it was really flattering, like, yeah, it's, if you see from that side, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, who can be, like, for example, in our case, we are teaching to you become a virtual CIO or become like MSP2, which is like a higher level IT management. You know, if your client base is like 5, 6, 10 people, that offering which you are trying to pursue and you can differentiate yourself is not the best fit for them. It's best fit for like, you know, 30, 40, 50 people companies.
Yeah.
But making you yourself different than the others, it can define that who is the customer you can benefit the best from you, right?
Yeah, and there's different information, because some of it is demographic. How many employees do they have? Where are they located? But oftentimes it's more situational. So your best client, and keep in mind, I used to run technology companies, so I love working with technology companies to say, oh, this, we're different, this wouldn't apply to us, because I laugh. It's like, well, I think I built one that did pretty well using these same principles. The idea is that you need to think about what would be a big enough problem that those people would spend the money to solve it. So the mere fact that their server goes down isn't enough, because it's the consequence of the server going down in their business that justifies why they would spend the money. So, for example, a 40-person law firm whose server is going down and they can't find their documents might seem like a great prospect for you. However, the 40-person law firm whose server goes down, and because of that, they were embarrassed, they were threatened with a lawsuit for because they couldn't find the document they needed to, and they lost billable hours. In fact, 14 of their employees couldn't do the billable work that day, and their average billable rate is $300 an hour, which means they're losing $4,200 an hour. Right? Now all of a sudden you start adding that up and you say, yeah, so they lost a full day of work. So those people lost about $40,000 in that one day that they'll never recover. Now you walk in and say, hey, we can solve all that, and it costs $3,000 a month, $5,000 a month. The client says, man, we lost that much money in one day. That's a very different discussion than saying, oh, your server's down. What a shame.
And that's the other, like, you know, it's just crazy. I see your books, chapters, and it's like, oh, like the new need for a good diagnosis, right? the type of what we do, we what the people are doing with IT, they diagnose the servers and the warranties and the stuff which doesn't matter for the client.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of diagnose what? What would you diagnose if you would be an IT company and you would go to the client?
Well, see, the funny part is this, that the IT company goes in and wants to talk all about IT. And the problem is the business customer is bringing you in because the last thing they want to worry about is IT. So they don't want to talk about IT. What they want to talk about is, and what you should be asking them is, look, what's the issue that sparked you to call us in the first place? Now that I understand that issue, how is that issue impacting your business? What happens if you don't solve it? So if you don't solve that problem, what happens? And compared to the other things on your plate, how important is that for you? And we refer to that as issue, impact, and importance. That says, what's the issue, the associated impact or consequence, and then the relative importance. Once we've discussed that, you now have a pretty good sense of, if this is a problem that's only costing them, you know, a few hundred dollars, they're probably not going to spend the money. And it's okay for you at that point to say, you know, it sounds like this is only costing you $500. Is that really worth spending money to fix? Because you're trying to get to the truth. Effective sales isn't about persuasion. It isn't about coercion. It's about getting to the truth as quickly as possible. So now you have a discussion that says, oh, well, actually, because this server was down, because we don't have the ability to access our documents remotely, we're not responsive to our clients. And when we're not responsive to our clients, they may tolerate it once or twice, but if it keeps happening, they're probably going to find somebody else, because they rely on us for important decisions. So whether it's an accounting firm, a law firm, a consulting company, those are the types of issues that are going to resonate with them. If it's a manufacturing company, look, when your servers are down, how does that impact your production and manufacturing? Oh, everything comes to a standstill, really. Now let me ask you, when it comes to a standstill, what do your employees do? Well, they sit around doing nothing. Okay, you don't have to pay them, do you? No, we still have to pay them. Really? How much does it cost you per hour? Now, they may not have ever considered how much it's costing them per hour when their systems are down, but now they will.
And that's really interesting what you are saying, because you are touching one element from IT, which is basically the infrastructure. How important is to have a reliable infrastructure, which is a solvable problem in the world, and many of the clients already get a service for that. So when, like, you are an IT company and you are the guy who try to solve the problem which they don't have, that's not going to lead you, you know, so far, right? But in this case, of course, you are going to be able to find the client is not going to be a good fit for you or things like that.
Sure.
The other thing, like, what I think is really important, and it was in the book really vividly, is the type of questions what you are asking and the education how you probe the different items. So let's say, like what you said, like you ask those questions and it shows them or open up doors to them and for you to be able to educate them and create new territories for discussion or which they haven't tried before or haven't considered that.
Well, let me give an example of that. So for example, let's say you're talking about outsourced CIO services. So obviously there's the base infrastructure side, but a lot of it comes down to, are you giving people strategic guidance about what they should be doing? So you might ask them, well, how do you address that now? And the client says, well, we don't really do that. How big of a deal is it? Nah, we don't think it's a big deal. And now what you can say is, you know, what our other clients tell us is that by not having that forward thinking, what happens is all of a sudden someone introduced a piece of technology in the office that no one had planned for, and it brings down the servers. Or someone says, how come I can't use my iPad and connect to these applications in the office? And no one knows about it. And guess what? If your employees want that, your customers probably do also. And so if you're not thinking ahead, then all of a sudden you become irrelevant to your employees and your customers. If you're irrelevant to employees, you're going to have trouble attracting and retaining the best talent. And if you're not relevant to your customers, they're going to go to someone else who is. Then you ask the killer question. So what's your plan to address that today? And they say, well, I don't have one. And then, of course, now they're looking at the IT provider like, can you help? But it's helping. But you're not saying, here's your problem. What you're saying is, here's a problem that other people have. And then you're asking them whether or not it's relevant for them.
And Ian, my question to you is like, something it was bothering me a couple of months ago is the following. That there is like a business problem or a business issue or a business opportunity, and this is some type of service. And when it's correlating like one-on-one, like a server goes down, losing hours,
yep,
losing money, that's pretty much direct, you know, sure, correlation. What I found, or what other people found, is like most of the things getting so indirect, and you have to guide them through like a chain of events to be able to connect that. I just tell you an example.
Well, so go ahead, and then I'll explain to you how you fix it.
Yeah, okay, like that, like an example for that is like that you can get the cash flow problem from the client. They have a cash flow problem. Holy cow, cash flow, and I have some IT. It's really like the big distance. Okay, why you have a cash flow problem? You don't have information. Why don't have information? You don't communicate with the team because somebody knows the information, but it's not there. Do you have a, like a dashboard of or a collaboration system or something, KPIs? No. Why you don't have the dashboard? Because nobody was thinking that the dashboard leads to better information, better cash flow. So that's the kind of indirect correlation which I think we should somehow do as a facilitator, even a trainer, even somebody like it's try to help to fix those problems, but I don't know what the solution will be until I don't know you.
So the reality is this, is that the way you described it, Danish, is absolutely right. This is something that it's part of the sales professional's job to ask these questions and have these discussions. Here's the challenge, though. It's a whole lot easier for me to suggest that other people are having this challenge and see if you identify with it than it is to say that's your problem. So, for example, I could say, well, gee, the reason you're probably having these cash flow problems is because you can't find this information, you can't communicate effectively. If I said, you know, when we see companies with cash flow problems, it's usually caused by one of two or three things. By the way, one of them we can't even solve. So one of them is that sometimes the accounting organization just isn't proactive. They don't have a process in place to manage cash flow and receivables or manage spending, and it's just dysfunctional. In other companies, they have that in place, but what they tell us is that before they didn't have an effective way to communicate with one another. They didn't have collaboration, and because of that, it ended up impacting their cash flow, and they didn't even realize it. How common do you think that is? And now, guess what? I'm not threatening, I'm not challenging them. How common is it? They go, oh, man, it's really common. It happens all the time. So how do you guys address that today? Well, that's our problem. We don't do that. Okay. Is the potential of us solving something like that worth a discussion? Yeah. Okay. So if that continues, how much does it cost you? Well, I mean, you know, we're it's killing morale. We're late on payroll. We're having trouble hiring and retaining people. Okay. So if you lost people, what does that really cost you? That's the question people are afraid to ask, is what does it really cost you if that happens? People are afraid to ask that. Ask the question, because that's the business case justification for whatever it is you're going to charge.
Perfect. So the idea is the following. Like I try to just recap that, is I can have different type of scenarios, because I go to a conversation which has typical finitive outcomes, right?
Sure.
So I can throw up a couple of probing questions about marketing, sales, operation, accounting, risk, whatever. And when I found this pressing, So when you see that's you hit the nail of the problem yet, right? Like whatever sales problem. Yeah, the grow, we don't do the grow. Ah, okay. So basically what we see, and you tell 3-4 stories related to typical sales problems and how others solved the problem. What I like those thing is like, it's because I had my custom problem. I have this problem in the world. I have to fix this problem because no one else can solve this problem.
Yeah.
Now it's getting, hey, other people have this problem. That's a pattern. Probably there is a solution. Now I can be, because most of the clients you say, it's custom, it's special, and you can somehow flip that thing to that, hey, that's a typical problem and there is a kind of typical solution, right?
So there's a few things early on. There's a concept we talk about in same side selling called entice, disarm, and discover. And it's this 3-step process on what I refer to as the same side pitch. And first, what I want you to think about is when you're on the receiving end of a visit from a salesperson, so a salesperson's coming to meet with you, are you excited about it or are you dreading it? Most people dread it. And if I think about, okay, here's someone from an IT company to pitch me something, I'm like, oh, God, they're going to come in, they're going to want to give a presentation, they're going to want PowerPoint, they're going to want to take a look at my network, like that's going to, like, I don't want any of that. And it's very important to disarm people's original perception of salespeople. And the way we do that is through this method of entice, disarm, and discover. So first we describe the problems that we solve with extraordinary results. Then we disarm the notion we're just there to sell something by acknowledging that we can't help everybody and we may not be a fit for them. And then we trigger a discovery phase to learn about their situation to see if we can help. So what's a problem? So one of your typical clients who's doing outsourced CIO services, what's the type of problem that they would be solving?
Typically, that can be 3 different items. There is like a business problem they have, and that's they are solving. They don't have any vision in like how they can beat the competition with faster service, better customer retention, better customer loyalty, this type of thing, or have some kind of operational excellence, better communication, things like that. So it goes back to how can I get more revenue and less cost kind of thing.
Yeah, so in that case, and there's a whole process I take people through to determine what the underlying problems are. But if we take those at face value and someone said, well, what do you do? I would say, well, look, our clients typically come to us because either they've been implementing technology, but they're not quite sure if the people running it now are on the forefront or on the tail end or really know what they're doing. They just have a guy who's doing things. And they're concerned that they may be falling behind the competition or they may be doing great. They're just not sure. They also know that their internal teams aren't communicating as effectively as they could be. And if they don't fix that, it can cost them employees as well as business. Now, for the right organizations, they tell us that in a matter of weeks or months, we remedy all those situations, so it's kind of smooth sailing. We map out a strategic plan, and they feel like at that point they have a good roadmap to crushing their competitors and being a great place for people to work. But I will tell you that our approach to that doesn't work for everybody. So about half the people we talk to, we determine, aren't a good fit for our approach. So I don't yet know if we can help you, but if solving those things is important to you, then I'm happy to learn more about your situation to see if we can help. And what it does is you entice interest by sharing the problems that you solve, then you disarm the notion you're there to sell something by acknowledging that not everybody's a good fit for you. Now, that makes some people uncomfortable because they don't want to acknowledge that not everyone's a fit for them. But I will tell you that it's the most powerful element of the same side pitch is the disarm piece.
Yeah, it's like I was listening to that, and it was like so it was like so perfect when you said that not everybody is. How you said that? Like, this is the problem we have to solve. And do you want to solve this problem? So it's not selling. Like, do you want to work with me? No.
Yeah.
Do you want to solve this problem or not? Yes, I want. This make any sense to solve and push effort on that? Yes.
Well,
so we can step to the next phase.
And let's think about this. at that point, if you're the client and you're facing those issues, which group do you hope you're in? The group we can help,
yeah,
or the group we can't help?
Right?
So now the client
I want to be the guy who is the fit.
And guess what? When the client then says, well, how would you solve it? Say, you know what? I don't even know if I can solve it for you yet. Now, by the way, this is not a Jedi mind trick. This is not deception. It has the added benefit of being true. You might have a client who on paper is the ideal fit for you, but they're not willing to spend the money to do it properly. So they're looking for the cheapest solution. That's not you. You might have a client who says, you know what? I'm not going to get rid of my IT guy. And after you meet the IT guy, you realize the IT guy shouldn't be working in the mailroom, let alone in the technology area, but they're never going to get rid of them. So that's not a good client for you. So there are all sorts of reasons that would make it so someone's not a good fit that have nothing to do with you as the vendor.
Yeah, and that was my, I'm spinning my wheel, and it's really inspiring this talk, because what I get back, or what I see to these traditional IT service providers are based on technology background engineers and really great, you know, thinking and whatnot. But most of the people would be able to solve the client's problem for sure. So so the potential is there. We see the problem is there on the client side, but that's the huge gap to be able to find how these people can talk to each other to realize the potential is there, solution can be made.
Exactly.
And that's like I'm just spinning my wheels, like what we have back, and lots of people saying to me like, you know, I went to the client and he just doesn't care this thing. And I just imagine that if they would be able to go through this kind of method you just mentioned with this two different things, like how I present myself and how I present this problem, that's this communication gap can like really is a flood of opportunities, and the math, lots of people can solve the problem. So it's just enormous.
So I'll give an example. I've got a client of mine who is in the IT outsourcing business. So people outsource their IT to them, and they run a remote service where they host everything for the client using remote desktop, in essence. And so people used to ask them what do they do, and they said, oh yeah, we host remote desktops, and they didn't know what that meant. And now they use the same side pitch for those clients. And they said, yeah, it used to be that we would go to a networking event and we would bring business cards with us and we would leave the event with the same number of business cards we showed up at. And after they started using the same side pitch, I said, well, how's it going? They said, I think it's going pretty well. I said, well, what have you learned? He said, well, I've learned that I need to bring more business cards to the events, because now the last three events I run out because people ask me, hey, can I get your card? And all they did was change. It's the same company doing the same things, but their message now is the same side pitch. And people say, literally, here's what happens. People say to them, hey, can I get your card? Would you mind giving us a call so you can see whether or not you can help us? Imagine if your clients were inviting you in saying, hey, can you help us? Instead of you saying, hey, can I come give you a pitch? It's a very different dynamic.
Yeah, it's totally different. And my question is, like, if you see that, because like everybody's saying like this, you know, sales is a gift or skill, can be learned. Like what's your, because obviously these IT company is a typical audience of this conversation. And most of them didn't learn selling. They get referrals, and basically they haven't learned the sales because their clients sold them. So it basically was able to just go and close the deal, that thing. But what would your, you know, not suggestion, you know, it's like I would like to have to these people to understand that this is doable. This is not a rocket science. It's not a Jedi mind trick, right?
The notion that salespeople are born, not taught, is an excuse. In my first book, In Upside Down Selling, I profiled an IT company that doubled their growth rate in 1 year. They added zero salespeople. In fact, at the time, they had an organization with exactly zero salespeople, and they were doing over $20 million a year in business. doubling their growth rate, and during that year, they pursued 40% fewer opportunities. Well, how did they do it? Well, we worked with their organization so that every single person who was customer-facing knew what questions to ask to see if an opportunity was real or not. They knew how to ask the questions to have an honest dialogue about whether or not there was an area they could help, and then they knew what the process would be going forward and where to include other people. See, the old school approach of some slick, slimy salesperson doesn't work anymore anyhow. So you don't need to be that person. You need to be masterful at diagnosing your client's condition, determining if you can help, and then helping them see what the potential outcome is. When I've done research with executives on how they make decisions, and this is something we write about in the book, I've done this with over 5,000 CEOs and executives now around the world, how they make decisions. And basically, if someone comes to them and wants to spend money, what the CEO or CXO is going to ask is, okay, you want to spend money on this thing. What problem does it solve, or why do I need it? That's the first one. And the second one is, what's the likely result or outcome if we do this? And if you can't talk to those two things, then you're wasting their time and your time. So if all of a sudden you arm your people with, look, these are the problems we're good at solving, go out and see and talk to clients who are having that problem. And then once you find them, then discuss what the results need to be and do an evaluation of whether or not we can achieve that. And if we can, then figure out what the scope of effort is in order to accomplish it and associate a price with it. And by the way, the price should be less than what it's costing them today. And I know you provide a tool that helps to do that, and it was really enlightening seeing what you have, because it does very much line up with the same side selling philosophy and gives people a tool to get there. But, you know, let's face it, if you have the concept, you don't have the tool, or if you have the tool and you don't have the concepts or the skills, then you're like, you know, you're half armed.
Yeah, I tell you the story. Like, our first client from UK, when we had the questionnaire, so we had a questionnaire which we've been using to sell. It was the aim to sell to people. So it's a questionnaire you go through, not because it's like just opening up a lot of valuable conversation. And if you are an IT type of company, there is a customer, you are asking lots of great questions. They don't know what you are going to do, but they want to work with you, because like that's the exception. And what the guy was doing, he just used it and sold 2-3 contracts in a month.
Yeah.
And I was saying, perfect. And then we seen lots of challenges. People was, hey, the client didn't complete the questionnaire, or it was like the wording was not good or whatnot. And I realized that you have a concept in your mind and you have a tool. A tool is not enough. Okay, so what's next? And what I try to see in this diagnosis you can ask questions, right? And you can educate people. And you are saying the book about creating boundaries around education. Because if you see what's happening in the IT industry, the IT industry screwed most of the consultation work, because when you get an IT guy, usually you are playing with them, send a proposal, send another one, give me this option, what about this one? Thank you very much, wait a sec, I'm going to have a counter offer from something. So you can make an IT guy jump around and give free advice, teaching you. You suck their blood, and they are not making any money. And that's sure. What the industry told to them, like, do a free assessment, and then you are going to be able to sell the big block, because you are going to sell a big, server or whatnot. The advice will be free. But now the landscape has changed, and you can't really sell the big stuff. So now you have to make somehow to the advice should be the value, because it was not a value before, because the big box was the value. So I don't know what your kind of advice for that, but in the IT industry, whoever can solve this problem, that's a big
home run. It's funny you say that. So I read an article on business trends every year in Forbes, and my business trends article just came out today. And one of the things I talk about is the notion that if if what your business is delivering a commodity item, and you feel your differentiation is the fact that you can provide something that people can buy online, that's not a viable long-term business model. Your expertise and your skills are your business model. And so if you're one of these IT providers, the providing the hardware or software is incidental. It's the implementation to ensure the business outcome or results that matters. And that's what you need to focus on. And the reality is this, is that the hardware, the software is a commodity. And someone says, yeah, but I can buy that online for 3% less. And you're thinking, yeah, but I spent all this time helping you with a solution. Who cares? Sell it at cost. It doesn't matter. Let them buy it online. It doesn't matter. You know, put an affiliate code into Amazon and make money on the back end, whatever. Like that doesn't matter. What you want to do is say, look, we're going to solve this for you for $10,000 a month. And then the hardware, you can buy it from us. You can buy it online. However you do it is fine. We don't really care. By the way, if you buy it from us, if anything happens with it, it's still one phone call. If you buy it from someone else, then obviously we have to take the time to call them. So you're going to pay probably 10% more buying it from us than from somebody else, but that's your call. And your client, when you're that transparent, says, no, I'd rather have just a one-stop shop, so I'm going to pay the extra 10%. Now you're not competing over the 3% because you already said you don't care about the 3%. And the client said, now the client says to you, well, that would be stupid. Why would I possibly save 3% and then have people pointing fingers at the other guy's problem? I'd rather pay 10% more and have one person to call, which is the right discussion. The other thing that people often do is the person doing the selling often is the problem of why the customer is focused on price. And here's what I mean. The perfect example is this. So one of your clients calls up their potential customer, and they say to them, oh, you already have a provider right now. And they say, yeah, we do. And the salesperson often says, yeah, well, how much are you paying them? Okay? And now you've just convinced the client that it's all about price. What if instead, what if you said, hey, you know, we always like to get a sense of how we compare to other people, and maybe we're dropping the ball. So if you've been working with them for a while, can you tell me some of the things you like about them? And then they share what they like about them. And at the end, you say, if you can think of one or two things that you wish they did better, what would those be? And now they're going to tell you the things their current provider doesn't do that they wish they did. And then you do a quick internal assessment. And if you can do those well, you say, is the potential of addressing those two things worth the discussion about how we might be able to help? And the client says, yeah, if you can fix those two things. Now, listen, I need to be right up front with you. We're probably not going to be the least expensive. I mean, I'm confident we can address those two areas, but we're not going to be the least expensive. Does that take us out of the running? And almost 100% of the time, the client will say, well, no, I mean, if you could solve those things, I'd happily pay more. And now it's not about price. It's about the result.
Yeah, it's about our fear that we are going to get rejection. That's the problem.
Well, so I always say that price matters most when the seller believes price matters most.
Yeah. And that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, go back to this free advice, because I think that's the problem in the industry. Like, if you see that the problem for most IT providers right now is that how they can switch the role from screwdriver, you know, type of observation to a consultancy observation. Like, I get a guy who give us a hint, like, you know what, I get suit and tie, I don't talk about IT, I present myself as a business consultant, and you know what, nobody asks me, like, my hourly rate is $200.
Yeah.
When you are an IT guy, everybody's like, hey, why is that 85 or something like
exactly.
that? The same thing, same guy, same stuff. But as you, so that's one approach. The second problem is the following, is that lots of people started, and that's kind of crazy. You see how many applications you can have for free or for little or no money. Like, you can literally go to the Salesforce, swipe your card, and I know that's going to be like $100 per month per user, but if you have five salespeople, it's a it's the most advanced, application for sales, and you get it for $500.
Yep.
10 years ago, it was like a $300,000 worth of investment and whatever. My question to you, when we saw the IT industry saw the $300,000 worth of investment, right? That was one thing. And lots of people start to sell even free stuff and give and get paid by the advice, which is 100% or 180 a degree shift from free advice to make money on the free application and get money from the advice. So how you see that like a traditional company who was focusing on that, what the challenges they might have, or what's the, not the challenge, what's the steps they have to take to be able to move the needle and be able to have this type of conversation credible way, and you know what, selling you Evernote free application for $2,000, because we are going to discover you, fix everything, deploy the stuff, create your documentation strategy, and then we are going to help you to use Evernote.
Here's the thing. It comes down to, look, what if you said to your client, look, there are a lot of tools that are free out there, but some of them conflict with each other. Some of them are not secure. Some of them are. Our job is to understand how your business operates, and then we can recommend the best tools. And let's face it, if we can recommend something from Google or Evernote or something that's free or near free, we'll let you do that, because that isn't where we make our money. We make our money on the expertise to guide you to the best solution. And these are the types of problems that we help our clients solve. And if you're facing these sorts of problems, we'd love to talk to you about how we can help. And if you're not, we're probably not the right fit. So that's how it changes it. Now, the difference between free consulting and collecting this information during the sales process is this. You can share examples of what you've done for other clients. You can share industry trends. When you start talking about their specific application and their specific needs, now you're giving free consulting. So if someone says to me, well, I mean, you know, we got people who are remote and we have people in other parts of the world, and right now we're spending a fortune and we're losing track of things, how would you solve that? Well, I'm not going to say, oh, in your case, here's the way we'd solve it, because then they're going to do a Google search and think they can do it on their own. I'm going to say, you know, we've had several clients in that same situation. In each case, the solution was a little bit different. Fundamentally, what they told us they needed was they needed a way to securely collaborate with one another, whether they're in the office or remotely. Now, for some of these organizations, it was important that they could operate and edit documents and collaborate from smartphones and tablets. Other ones didn't need that at all. Some of them had a need to operate when they had small bandwidth. Other ones, every place they were at was always, you know, high bandwidth applications. So I don't know enough about your situation to tell you exactly how we'd solve it for you. That's part of the discovery process we go through. But in each of those situations, no matter how obscure, we were able to deliver a solution that worked for them. I don't want to recommend one solution because it may not be the right one for you. And then the client goes, oh, that makes total sense. Now, I didn't not answer the question. I just didn't give them the keys to the kingdom. I didn't tell them, oh, here's the solution. Now, by the way, I have the other added benefit of I don't know enough about their situation yet to make a good recommendation. So why do I want to make a recommendation where I might look stupid?
It's crazy. Like, it's really interesting. We have an exercise called the 10-point exercise. This is a typical asking questions from a like it's a workshop. 6-7 people ask questions and make a prioritized list. And we help VCIOs to sell 3 exercises in one bundle. And it's typically solving these type of problems like that. You know what? What we usually do is a 3 10-point exercise bundle, which is like $1,000. And what the result will be that. So the same thing what you see in the dentist, you go inside, pay for the discovery, pay for another, because you have to do that because the dentist doesn't know what they have to do with you, right? So they need, but it's not a free, X-ray.
Well, Your Honor, here's the other thing that you need to realize, and that your clients need to realize, which is what people often say to me is, well, we can't charge for that. And here's the funny part. Let's say you're talking to a client and the work you would do for them is going to be $15,000 a month. So they're going to spend the better part of $200,000 a year. The client who's not willing to spend $2,000 or $5,000 to know that you're the right fit isn't serious anyhow. So you're wasting your time. And ironically, when you do it for free, they don't take it seriously. When you charge a little bit, they actually get a lot more for it. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so I want to make sure I address any of the questions that you've got.
Yeah, it's like it's endless. So we have to just stop somehow because, like, one last question, and then we can roll like that. When you get to this portion of selling your first discovery phase, right? So let's sell somehow that you want to make sure. What I think is the following is happening from how you can make it happen. Is asking again a question like, okay, what was the successful IT implementation which you can recall? Okay, that CRM was right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many dead end you get? How many commitment you get from the team? How many times you had to be on this meeting? How many times you had to read those stuff? How much hours altogether the team put behind the success?
Yeah.
Now I can make it half. That's because most of the people know that if you have a success, that was like a bloody lot of work behind it.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. And that's the reality for implementing a free Basecamp, a free Slack, a free Evernote, Trello, any type of GoToWebinar, whatever. Yeah. It's a lot of effort to master those skills. And this is the guy who can help. Usually we have this at the end. Give us three thoughts or just three things which probably people can do, like not tomorrow, but like in a next week to make these things happen. One will be to buy the book and, you know, read it. That's mine. But actually, like, because it's really practical. So what you said is always, I try to make it like a little bit templatable.
Yep.
So like how you say this, you know, pitch and how you get this, it's really practical.
Yep.
So it's really good. It's not just ideas or something like
sure.
that. What would be your three thing which is the best ROI of ever?
Okay, so, well, you know what? I mean, there's a lot of them, or we would have just written three pages in the book, and that would have been it. But I'll give you a few things that I think make a huge difference for businesses that they can do right away. The first one is that with your team, determine what problems you're masterful at solving. And that sounds like a simple concept, but let me tell you how to do it. What you do is you sit down with your team and you literally pick your top couple of clients for each individual. So each person's responsible for, let's say, two clients. And you say, how would the customer, irrespective of technology, have described the business problem that was the reason they spent the money to solve it? What would they have said if we weren't in the room? What would they have complained about that we, in essence, solved for them? And guess what? They're not saying, oh, if we only had an IT company to outsource this to. That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is, man, I'm sick of always getting surprised by technology. I'm sick of our people not being able to communicate to each other and we look like idiots in front of our clients. Those are the types of things that it would sound like. Okay? So the first thing is understanding that process. And you can do that in an environment where you sit down and go through it. The second thing is to come up with a list of questions to get what I call the same side quadrants, or the four quadrants of information. So what I tell people to do is take a blank sheet of paper, draw a vertical line down the center, and then a horizontal line across the middle, so you have four quadrants, if you will. And in the upper left quadrant, what you do is you write the word issue. In the upper right quadrant, you write the word impact and importance. In the lower left, you write the results. In the lower right, you write others impacted. When you meet with a potential client, you actually collect your notes in each of those quadrants. Now, if you do that on a sheet of paper and you realize that you never discussed results, it will take you a fraction of a second looking at the sheet of paper and say, oh, I never discussed that. So that way you have a structure for ensuring that people get to issue, impact, importance, results, and who else is impacted. And we didn't talk about all those in great detail, but it's stuff that we write about extensively in the book, and you can pick that up if you search on those concepts. I'm sure there's a bunch of articles I've written that you can get a lot of that information for free also. So those are two biggest things. The last one is practice. So top athletes practice every single day. You know, the best goal scorer in hockey doesn't say, oh, I'm so good, I don't need to practice anymore. And when I ask clients, how many hours on average does your team practice real live customer conversations, the answer is something close to zero. So people don't do it. And then I ask them, I say, well, if you did, if let's say you just did it for an hour a week, what kind of results would you see? Oh, it would be huge, would make it, you know, would be so much more successful. And so we actually built a tool, a game called Same Side Improv. It's a card game. And in this card game, it's all designed around practicing going through these same side quadrants.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's actually, you know what, the companies that use it have seen just amazing results. I mean, it's a flattering thing for me, because when I see the results, I mean, just they practice all the time. And then there's some fun things. There's a whole category of cards called secret cards. And the secret cards are the kinds of things that your customers do that they don't tell you about. So, for example, in each improv session, there are three people. So there's a salesperson, there's a customer, and then there's an observer. And the customer is the one who picks the cards. And it'll say what their role is, how you met them, things like that. But then the secret cards are things like, you're the customer, and it says, you don't think you need this, right? Or, I'm looking for free information. Or, I'm trying to get information from this vendor to leverage against the existing vendor. Or, I have executive pressure to solve this, and I'll lose my job if I don't solve it. Or, the person you're dealing with is afraid to give up headcount or lose control. Those are the things that never get said, but happen every day. And what happens is, if you rehearse those for an hour a week with three people, at the end of a month, each person has experienced 12 scenarios, which is 12 more than they probably have in the last year. And now when it comes up in a meeting, they're fully prepared. They know how to deal with it. So those are the three things. So the three things come down to defining the problems that you solve, having a structure around meetings to collect the right information, and then practice, practice, practice. And all I'm asking you to do is an hour a week. Malcolm Gladwell in Outliers reports that to become a master of something, it's 10,000 hours, which is 20 hours a week for 10 years. I'm just saying do 1 hour, 1 hour a week, and you'll see dramatic results.
Ian, I can't really thank you for these things. This will be that really important and inspiring information for our audience. So thank you very much. And, you know, anything you comes up with this stuff, like, please let me know, because, like, I would like to share this thing, like this card game. I didn't know that, and I think it's a really great example.
All this stuff's on growmyrevenue.com. So, you know, they can either go to ianaltman.com or growmyrevenue.com. It all points to the same place.
Yeah. Awesome. So thank you very much, Ian. And I'm kind of speechless. So let's give the toast to the people. And if they have any question, probably I can pass it to you. So that's thank you again for that.
Absolutely. And maybe we'll do this again.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.